WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. Yes, 1 o'clock has rolled around once again, folks. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. And breaking news, ladies and gents, the Detroit Lions have found their guy. Yes, Jim Caldwell will be the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, ending a 2-week search during which they interviewed only 4 candidates. And of course, one of those candidates that the Lions were really banking on were offensive coordinator for the San Diego Chargers, Ken Whisenhunt, who took the head coaching job over at Tennessee yesterday. So this news comes about 20 minutes ago, ladies and gents. Again, if you call in and definitely want to hear your thoughts on Jim Caldwell. Is he the right guy? Do you agree with the move to hire Jim here? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And of course, later on in the hour, Alex and Matt will join me, and we'll dive in and give you our thoughts on the hiring of Jim Caldwell. And folks, before I move on, just want to throw some facts out there. When you look at Caldwell's track record, specifically this past season with the Ravens, not real impressive. Under Caldwell this season, the Ravens were actually 29th in total offense and 25th in scoring. Quarterback Joe Flacco, who Caldwell was brought in to mentor, threw more interceptions than touchdowns this season, 22 interceptions and 19 touchdowns. So the track record certainly did not look great this season, but hey, you know, it's a new team with a new makeup. Different team with a different makeup compared to the Ravens. We will see. Again, if you want to call in and express your thoughts on the Lions hiring Jim Caldwell as their new head coach, give us a call, 517-355-9527. And, before we jump into our current sports quick hit headliners, we have news from the Lansing Lugnuts as well. The Toronto Blue Jays announced Monday afternoon that John Tamargo Jr. is returning as the manager for the Lansing Lugnuts. The 37-year-old Tamargo will be managing Lansing for a third straight season and spending his 5th year with the Lugnuts. Now, Tamargo has guided the Lugnuts to a 143-133 record over the past 2 seasons, and was named the Midwest League's Manager of the Year after guiding Lansing to a franchise record 82 wins and a first half Eastern Division title back in 2012. The Lugnuts finished 61-78 last season. And today I have the pleasure of welcoming certainly a good friend of mine, a friend of Current Sports as always. He is the play-by-play announcer for the Lansing Lugnuts. It is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. How you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing great, Al. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. First of all, I want to talk about the news of John Tamargo being rehired as returning as the manager for the Lansing Lugnuts. What are your thoughts on Tamargo, and what makes him a special manager?
Well, the first thing is he loves Lansing, and we love having a guy in here who looks forward to coming into Lansing, Michigan, because we'll hear from other baseball players. Baseball is such a warm weather climate sport. They'll come in April, May. It'll be cold. Mm-hmm. There will be some rainy days, and JT embraces that. He was a hitting coach in 2010, a hitting coach in 2011, and you mentioned that career record is 10 games above 500.
Right.
But 2012, that's the best year in Lugnuts history, and that was his rookie year as the skipper. So I'm looking forward to having him back. We're having the same pitching coach back, too, and Vince Horsman, who has helped some of the finest pitching prospects come through here.
Right.
It's going to be a good coaching staff.
Now, I want to ask you about Ken Huckabee, because he will be Lansing's hitting coach this season. The Blue Jays announced that as well. What do you know about Ken?
Played in the major leagues for several years, and you love those guys with the major league experience, because the players, anytime they start to question you, you can say, you know, I was talking to, drop a big name, Carlos Delgado, and he said this to me. And the major leaguers, the former big-time guys, they'll drop in during the season, too.
Nice.
But I think Ken will be great. And a hitting coach in Lansing, you can see the progress that they make. Forget a struggle in April. Suddenly a guy will turn things on in July, August, and you have yourself a prospect.
You know, Jesse, again, as I alluded to, the Lug Nuts actually finished 61-78 last season. Really a tough season for them last season, if you look at everything and put it out there. For the Lug Nuts, if you're looking at last season and looking at those struggles, what must they improve on this season?
This is going to sound simple. They'll have better talent this year than they had last year.
Gotcha.
They're going to have great prospects coming through. The players we had with the team last year, there were a couple of huge pitching prospects. Roberto Osuna was one. He got injured in May, so he didn't have his full season.
Wow.
Daniel Norris started to put things together, but every time we had a player start to excel, Emilio Guerrero, Jorge Flores, they got promoted up to Dunedin, and the Blue Jays kept the high-tier prospects beneath us. They kept them beneath us so Vancouver could win another championship.
Wow.
So now they're coming to Lansing. We're going to see great position players, Matt Dean, Mitch Ney, Dowell Lugo, top-notch guys. You don't know these names, they're going to be outstanding. And the pitchers are going to be top-notch, too. The talent will be better this year than last year. Could be another 2012.
Wow, there you have it. And, you know, Jesse, I know we were still a long way. You know, I'm still trying to get my mindset out of, you know, football still going on, basketball still going on. But when does the season start for you guys?
Well, the sun's starting to shine again.
It's nice out there today.
Just turn it to the first week of April and get all ready.
You know what? My former boss, Fred Heumann, anytime baseball, I'm pretty sure his TV stays on MLB Network year-round. I mean, he used to tell me all the time, he's a huge baseball fanatic. I'm sure many out there cannot wait to see the bat start flying out there again.
I don't know whether good weather brings baseball or baseball brings the good weather, but once it gets to be time to get outside and start picnicking again, we'll be busy at the ballpark.
You know, Jesse, that is so true, so true. Now, Jesse, you know, something that it was a big story yesterday that we really dove into and discussed was the A-Rod case. If you saw Scott Pelley with CBS, he had a sit-down with Anthony Tony Bosch of the whole Bosch Biogenesis Clinic, whatever. And he sat down with Tony Bosch, and they talked about and they outlined his account of what exactly went down with Alex Rodriguez and what the text messages and the situation with him being suspended and whatnot. They kind of laid everything out and put it on the table. What were your thoughts on that interview?
It makes me uncomfortable that if I simply say to you, there's going to be a clinic we'll find has been enhancing illegally baseball players. It's been juicing up not only major leaguers, but also kids. And we're talking teenagers.
Wow.
And then I say, and by the way, the guy in charge of all of that, he's going to be our star witness so we can put away Alex Rodriguez for a long time. Tony Bosch is the villain of this, and yet he's being made out to be the good guy. He loves it. It remakes his image. But he is being paid by Major League Baseball. And I don't distrust his words, but I distrust him. And the entire piece, did you notice Alex Rodriguez's lawyer was interviewed in the darkness?
Yeah, I saw that.
Bob Manfred was interviewed in a darkened room. It was like Scott Pelley was meeting with them undercover, as if these weren't the sort of people you want to meet with on a sunshiny day.
You know what, Jesse, you know, and you talk about steroids in baseball. We have this conversation, it seems like, every single year, every month, something comes up about it. It's really frustrating, and it really has put a dark cloud over the game of baseball. I want to get your thoughts on how tainted has the game become, in your eyes, when you look at where steroids stands in the game of baseball today?
The game in the 1990s and the early 2000s was tainted, but it tainted everybody. It's not just Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. A guy I look at is Eric Gagne, who is nothing, who got on performance-enhancing drugs and turned into the greatest closer in baseball history for 1-2 years. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately fell off the map. But that doesn't taint just him. That taints all of the owners. That taints Bud Selig. This happened under their watch. Remember in 2003, we all knew Barry Bonds was juicing. We all knew that this was illegal.
Right.
They didn't stop him from breaking Hank Aaron's career home run record. So this goes under everyone. I have a big problem with scapegoats. And I also have a big problem with people who think that baseball is cleaner than it really is. Baseball players have cheated for a long time. There have been amphetamines and greenies. In the early 1980s, Mike Schmidt and Pete Rose of the Philadelphia Phillies were caught with illegal drugs, amphetamines.
Right.
I'm sorry, this is a part of baseball's past. I'm not saying that to excuse today's players. I'm saying that to say it was never as wholesome as we want it to be.
You know what, Jesse? And like you said, I mean, we've seen baseball players have been doing this for years, and they're going to get, in my opinion, they're going to continue to do it.
Yes.
They're going to find the loopholes. They're going to find ways to cheat the test and whatnot. What can be done to try to alleviate this problem. Is it far beyond net reach now? And does baseball need to reevaluate how they handle the situation with steroids?
The first thing is, and Buck O'Neill, the late Buck O'Neill, made this claim before anyone else I've heard, stop telling kids how much it works. I just said to you how much it made Eric Gagne a great closer and how much Barry Bonds became a great home run hitter. We have to stop that. That makes me a hypocrite. But as long as kids hear, oh, it'll make you a great player, but it's illegal, this is bad. You need to emphasize the negatives. You need to say, here's why you shouldn't. Here are all those great reasons why. The second thing is, forget going after the players at the top. The Tony Boshes and those clinics need to be cut off at the root so that way baseball players don't have the supplier, they don't have the temptation.
Right.
And I tell you, the third thing is already happening, and that is I was with a minor league baseball team where a player tested positive and got caught. The team hated him. They threw him under the bus.
This is minor league.
Minor league. He was persona non grata.
Jesse, when you talk about the testing that goes on in the minors, is it equivalent? Is it the same that goes in the majors too?
It is
the same
harsher.
Process? It's harsher in the minors.
Bigger.
Really, I would think it would be the same process, but it's more strenuous in the
minors. It'll be a 10:30 a.m. game, and then suddenly they'll show up to bring all of our players in for testing. It'll be a 13-inning marathon game, midnight. They'll show up to bring all of our players.
So it's random.
Utterly random, the players have no clue, and what it leads to is an atmosphere where I guarantee you 70, 80, 90% of the players not only will not touch it, but they consider it with a negative stigma. The same way that whatever you might consider, you could go find society nowadays. Now, smoking now carries a negative stigma that it didn't have in the 1950s or 60s. Mm-hmm. If a ball player today found out that a teammate was juicing, he wouldn't say, how could I get on that? He'd say, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. This is becoming more and more ball players are realizing this is tarring their name. When guys get caught, there was a huge major league outcry. The players who are huge in social media, Brandon McCarthy, they got out there and they said, I'm sick and tired of these guys making me look bad. Because it does. It makes all baseball players look bad. And the majority are now stepping forward and saying, I'm clean. I'm sick and tired of everybody out in the nation looking at this one, two, three players, Johnny Peralta, Nelson Cruz, and thinking that's all of us.
Exactly. That's a very, very well point. Good point there, Jesse. And you know what? Something that when you look at and me looking at the game of baseball today, so many players, and when you look at that interview with Scott Pelley, something that really stuck out to me in that interview is when Tony Bosch was asked by Scott the issue of fair use when it comes to steroids in the game. And Tony made an interesting argument when he talked about A-Rod. And he says that, you know, when you look at A-Rod and he goes out there on the plate and he's looking at the pitcher, knowing that the pitcher may be on steroids, when he hits that fly ball to left field, knowing that the left field catcher may be on steroids, when he rounds first base, you know, that guy may be on steroids. I mean, so many, but the point he's making is so many players use it, and he feels as though it puts pressure on those who don't to try to live up to you know, the standard of those who are using it. Because it's kind of unfair when you got guys using it and they're out there doing their thing and having this awesome season and you're not juicing. And how do you measure up to that? You know what I mean?
It becomes ethics. And it becomes, are you costing yourself money? Are you costing yourself a job? Mm-hmm. And so it's tough. Now, me and you, let's say you're in a college course and everybody else is cheating. I still wouldn't cheat because my parents brought me up to be ethical. But this is not a black and white situation. This isn't cheater or non-cheater. This crosses so many shades of gray. Let's say you're growing up in a low-income family. Mm-hmm. Maybe in America, maybe in the Dominican Republic, you come from no money. You are denying your family enormous amounts of money. You could be done. You could be sent back there. You can be cut at any moment. Or you can provide money for your family. We had a pitching coach with the Lugnuts from the Dominican. His father died, and it took many months of paychecks to pay for the funeral. It's an entirely different cost of living. So I'm not saying that to excuse cheating. I'm not saying that to say this is why A-Rod should have done it.
Right.
But I'm saying I understand, if that makes sense.
Do you ever think that, I know this is a far-fetched notion here, something we talked about on yesterday's show, Do you think at this point right now that the situation is so out of hand that baseball needs to reevaluate the just steroids in general and possibly legalize it in the game of baseball?
I think it's the opposite. I think Major League Baseball is actually doing a better and better job. I think minor leagues, they're doing an outstanding job of eradicating it. I think that the outrage took too long to catch up with it. If we were outraged back in 1995 before any of this started, that would be one thing. We're outraged now where I would say a very small percentage of players enhance.
Right.
And steroids, we could make the argument, find those drugs that actually do no damage. And I would love to see studies that say this will not shorten your life. This will not cause your body to break down. If you could prove that, I say absolutely legalize them.
Mm-hmm.
But I want illegalized any of those drugs that cause negative damage. It's football gets rid of concussions and is trying to do whatever they can, whether it's helmet safety with Wes Welker, whether it's trying to tackle the proper way. Not because it makes for a better game, but because you are crippling and shortening lifespans and leading to CTE. Baseball needs to look, give a good hard look at why. What are the long-term medical causes and ramifications? And then from there, say, what needs to be illegalized and what can we actually prescribe on a healthy basis?
Jesse, how rampant is steroid use in the game, in the minor league baseball?
Very few.
And the guys
who do get caught, it has a negative stigma.
When's the last time you have seen an issue where a player was, as any Lugnuts players have ever been caught
using? We had a player named Sean Ochinco who was a Lugnut back in 2010, and he was caught this year. So who knows when he got on it? Who knows what the substance is? There are so many substances on the list.
And what was his punishment?
50 games.
Gotcha.
Immediately gone. 50-game suspension. And I guarantee, and Brian Van Kirk was a Lugnut in 2009. He got caught. The fact that I can specifically name guys, and every now and then you'll hear another week, one player, two players test positive. Well, I'm sorry, the Lugnuts are part of a 7-8-team minor league system, 25 players on each team, times 30 for major league teams. This
right.
is a small percentage.
Right.
So I think it's baseball more has an issue and a stereotype problem with steroids that is getting better in the minors. And in the major leagues, anytime a player has a tremendous year, now we're saying why?
The doubt creeps in.
But Major League Baseball brought this on itself in not stopping things at the very start. In the 1980s with Jose Canseco and the A's, in the 1990s when Mark McGwire got involved, and McGwire probably was involved in the 80s too, but McGwire and Sosa, Major League Baseball brought this on itself. It cannot blame anyone but itself.
You talk about the process being, the testing process when it comes to steroids. You talk about the random drug testing that you guys go through in the minors, and it being more polished, if you will, than the majors. Will that system ever be adopted in the majors as well? If you're starting to see, if they're starting to see success of that testing method in the minors,
because major league players are getting outraged, they go right to their players' association and say, "We want this." That was a huge part of the start. The MLBPA put up so many blockades and walls at the very start, right from the 1990s, saying, don't test for this, don't test for that. It's an invasion of privacy. Once the players within the MLBPA said, we are sick and tired of people looking at me funny because of what this player is doing, that caused it. So
right.
I think, too, if the right players get involved in the leadership, it's the right people.
Right, exactly.
If the right people are at the top, then you've got something going well. But even so, all this that I've said to you that has been very optimistic, next year you could have another top-notch player, whoever it might be, get collared for HGH or who knows what, and suddenly all of this comes up again. It's a cycle with baseball.
It is. Jesse, before I let you go, I want to talk about something really briefly. You know the Dan Le Batard situation.
Yes.
Dan Le Batard, of course, writer for the Miami Herald. He's been an esteemed writer, now has a radio show, TV show everywhere. If you look at Dan Le Batard and what he did, for those who don't know, Dan Le Batard actually, he was so frustrated with those who are suspected of using steroids not being allowed to, you know, grace the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame. He was so frustrated at that fact that he decided to give up his vote to the site Deadspin. Of all, I don't know why Deadspin. He regrets that too when he talks about it. But Deadspin actually, so what Deadspin did was they actually held a pool on their website and had a few players on there where fans got the chance to choose who Dan Le Batard's vote would go to. when you look at Dan and his argument, and now Dan has totally been banned now from voting in the Baseball Hall of Fame now, but when you look at what Dan did, and you look at his argument for those who have used steroids or are suspected of using steroids, do you think they should grace the hall, Jesse?
Yes, to a certain extent. I would not vote in Eric Gagne. I would vote in Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And that, to me, there are tons of writers who say, this is so difficult. This is such a difficult decision. I put them in. And then you educate kids.
And why? Why do you put them in?
Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are two of the greatest baseball players to ever live.
Mm-hmm.
And I can make the argument, too, that in the 1980s to the early 1990s, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were Hall of Famers already. And then they started enhancing, and they put themselves into a pantheon of even greater. But they had Hall of Fame ability and they had Hall of Fame body of work. Whereas I think if you look at other players, Eric Gagne, Brett Boone, that like the enhancing, oh, it certainly enhanced their skill, but before it started, they were nothing. They weren't very good. And I agree. Can I agree both with the Baseball Writers Association of America and Dan Le Batard?
It's voter
fraud. If I give you a vote to vote for whoever wins this Oscar, and then I find out that you gave it to your little sister's cat or whomever, it's voter fraud. You didn't make the vote.
Right.
You're banned. You lose the privilege of having that vote.
Right.
But Le Batard's right. It's a terrible system. The maximum of two is a terrible idea. 75% might be too high a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a bigger problem is that the Baseball Writers Association of America doesn't understand that the current Hall of Fame standards already suggest that Mike Mussina is better than Hall of Famers. Curt Schilling is better than Hall of Famers. Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, who fell off the ballot, guy after guy after guy, who is not even close, who's
right.
getting 30%. This is better than what graces Cooperstown. Cooperstown is not just Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth. It's
right.
a lot of guys. The entire system is so flawed, so I applaud Le Batard.
You know, and you look at it, you know, guys like, you know, Barry Bonds and even McGuire and Sosa, those guys brought so many fans to the game. And I think that alone should hold a lot of weight in that argument as well.
Mike Lupica wrote an entire book, Summer of 98,
right.
on how great the home run chase was. Well, if now we're saying all of these statistics don't matter, should he give up all of his profits of the book?
Exactly.
Writers prospered during the steroid era. The statistics counted. There were winners and losers. We're not forcing the Yankees to give back their World Series championships. So I don't understand how we can scapegoat the players and say it's their fault when this was part of the entire institution.
I agree with you 120%, Jesse. There you have it. Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He is the play-by-play announcer for the Lansing Lugnuts. Again, Jesse, reminding people when baseball season starts. We know, I know it's a long time away, but hey.
Go to LansingLugnuts.com.
Spring
training's in March, but we'll be ready in April. Crosstown Showdown presented by Auto Owners Insurance. Lugnuts, Michigan State Spartans. It's going to be terrific.
The Crosstown Showdown is one of the funnest events, sporting events you can go to in the Lansing area. I love it every single year. Jesse, I'll see you down there, all right?
Thank you,
Al. We got to do this again. Thanks a lot, Jesse. All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will get to your current sports quick hit headliners. And, of course, we'll be talking about the new Lions head coach. Yes, we'll dive into all that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports is coming right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, so much to talk about in the world of sports today. We just finished chatting with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He is the play-by-play man for the Lansing Lugnuts, and we discussed John Tamargo. John Tamargo has he will be returning. He will be returning for his third season as the Lansing Lugnuts manager. According to the Toronto Blue Jays, that announcement was made yesterday, and we dove into the A-Rod steroid issue. We really talked about that a lot yesterday, and A-Rod is suing the MLB, which we'll get to in just a sec. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 14th. 2014. All right. Ken Whisenhunt has accepted an offer to become the new coach of the Tennessee Titans. Ken went on to say, this is from Titans president and CEO Tommy Smith. He said in a statement, quote, "This is a big day for this franchise. Ken is a well-respected coach in this league, and I am looking forward to seeing his vision become reality for this team." Now, Whisenhunt was completing his duties Monday as the San Diego Chargers offensive coordinator after the team was eliminated Sunday in the AFC Divisional round by the Denver Broncos. Now, the Detroit Lions had planned to send their team playing to San Diego in an effort to further evaluate Whisenhunt, but sources say that Whisenhunt asked them to put those planes on hold until he was finished with his season-ending business with the Chargers. So he's now with Tennessee, and if you haven't heard, after losing out on Ken, the Lions have now hired Ravens offensive coordinator Jim Caldwell. Now, Caldwell, also former Indianapolis Colts head coach, had been in talks with the Lions. Now, Detroit Vice Chairman Bill Ford Jr. also spoke on Monday with Tony Dungy, former Colts coach who was a mentor to his eventual successor, Caldwell. And Tony went on to say yesterday, quote, "I know the Lions also want discipline and good character in the locker room. I'm not saying their other candidates can't achieve those things, but those are Jim's strengths with his background, especially from his influence under Joe Paterno at Penn State and hopefully in our program in the NFL." So there you have that. The Lions have hired Ravens offensive coordinator Jim Caldwell as their next head coach. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on that, we'll be diving in it in just a second. Give us a call. Pick up that phone, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Some sad news in the world of sports, ladies and gents. Norm Parker, a Hazel Park native and 1965 Eastern Michigan graduate, died Monday at the age of 72. Now, there was no immediate cause of death given, but Parker struggled for many, many years with diabetes. He was a defensive coach at MSU under George Perlis from 1983 to 1994, serving as defensive coordinator for the final five seasons. Now, his defenses ranked in the top 10 in rushing defenses five times. They were known for sound play, physical play, and excellent tackling. Great defenses during that time with Parker. Now, funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday at St. Mary Catholic Church in Chelsea. Visitation will be Thursday for family and friends only, and a memorial service will be held in Iowa City at a later date. Sad news there. Our condolences here at WKR and Current Sports go with the Parker family. All right, Lansing Lugnuts manager John Tamargo Jr. will return for his third season as the club skipper. That's according to the Toronto Blue Jays. Tamargo served as the Lugnuts hitting coach for two seasons prior to taking the job and has amassed a 143-133 record in his first two seasons. Fresh off a 162-game suspension, Alex Rodriguez's lawyers have filed a lawsuit against the MLB and the Players Association, citing that arbitrator Frederick Horwitz was biased in his ruling. Now, Rodriguez claims that Horwitz ignored a stipulation of baseball's joint drug agreement, which requires a 50-game ban for a first-time drug offense. He responded saying, quote, "While the length of the suspension may be unprecedented for an MLB player, so is the misconduct he committed." Portuguese superstar Cristiano Ronaldo officially ended Lionel Messi's four-year reign as soccer's top player, winning the 2013 Ballon d'Or. Now, the Real Madrid winger tallied a staggering 69 goals for his pro and national team, making him an easy favorite for the sport's top honor. The Chicago Cubs have a new mascot, folks, Clark. Yes, Clark the Cub was revealed at the Chicago Pediatric Center Monday night. Several local prospects joined the unveiling of the mascot and did jumping jacks and stretches with the children at the local hospital. I think that's a really cool name, Clark the Cub. It's got a ring to it right there, and that's pretty cool stuff. Chicago, the Cubs finally have a mascot. That's cool stuff. All right, Rafael Nadal, he advanced to the second round of the Australian Open in mild conditions when most of the day featured extremely hot temperatures. Now, his opponent, Bernard Tomic, retired early with a leg injury and did not finish more than one set. Nadal joins Roger Federer and Andy Murray in advancement to the second round of the Australian Open. All right, well, we have a caller right now, Todd from Lake Orion. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
I'm doing well. It's a nice day out.
Yes, it is. Gorgeous.
I'm a little baffled by the opinion of your last guest or the last guy on your show. No one is asking these guys who took PEDs to give back their money, right? They get to keep the money that they made, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
They get to keep their records in the record books, right?
Believe so, yeah.
So the only way to punish these individuals, and believe me, any of these guys that were good enough to is supposedly make it to the Hall of Fame, and I'll throw Pete Rose in there, is to shame them, is to tarnish their legacy. Every one of those guys that we named, and we can name them, wanted to get into the Hall of Fame. And they made immense amount of money, and their names will always be associated with baseball. But the way to punish a Barry Bonds, whose arrogance and cheating needs to be punished, is to take away from him the thing that he wants most. His legacy will always be tarnished. Mm-hmm. Barry Bonds can be the home run champion because baseball has decided that. He can't be a Hall of Famer because he doesn't deserve it. I don't get what's so confusing about that. I mean, again, no one's asking him to give back his money. No one's asking him not to be able to feed his children or live in a home or enjoy, to an extent, the ill-gotten gains he got from cheating. The only way to punish, and I guarantee you, if you were to ask Pete Rose, other than his health and probably the health of his family, the thing he wants most in life is to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Pete, you can't have it. He didn't play by the rules. Why are all these people so concerned about people who were unwilling and incapable of doing what they knew was right and chose to do to be wrong? I mean, are we really bothered that Roger Clemens isn't going to get into the Hall of Fame? That's the only thing that can be done to punish Roger Clemens. He got over on all of us. We all watched a cheater. We all paid our money to see him play. The only thing you can do to him is not give him his legacy.
Gotcha. So no ifs, ands, or buts. You think they should not be let in the Hall of Fame whatsoever?
Well, no, they shouldn't, because Let me ask you this. Are you married, sir?
No, I'm not.
Okay, but if you were married, I'll give you the case of Pete Rose. If you were married to a woman and you said, listen, the only thing you cannot do is cheat on me with another man. I don't care whether you cook, you clean. I don't care if you do anything else. But I'm telling you, the only thing you cannot do is bet on baseball. He did it. He doesn't get in the Hall of Fame. It's not hard. It doesn't need to be explained. You don't go, well, you know what? She was a good-looking woman, and she was a good mother to your kids. She broke the one rule that you reiterated to her year after year, day after day, and broke it. You don't get in.
Gotcha, yeah. I see that. That's I certainly agree. I mean, and you know, it's so funny because there's so many mixed emotions about it. Because from my perspective, Ty, when you look at the impact that these guys made on the game, from my financial standpoint, from a popularity standpoint, they did impact the game in some positive way. And I think that has to be noted some way, somehow. Now, whether you let them to the Hall of Fame,
they became extremely wealthy and rich. No one's taking away their money. Yeah, they made the owners a lot of money. They made themselves a tremendous amount of money. No one's taking away their money. We're taking away their legacy. Raphael Palmeiro, I don't have anything personally against. You know, it will bother Raphael Palmeiro until the day he is lowered into this earth that he's not a Hall of Famer. It will bother Barry Bonds until he leaves. And I hope he lives a long, happy life. It's not personal with him, but he can't be a Hall of Famer. And that's the only thing you have on these guys, because they've already gotten over on him.
Right. Right, I hear you. Hey, thanks a lot for your call, bud. Appreciate it. Yeah, if you want to call in and share your thoughts on this, it's such a debated topic left and right. Should those that use PEDs in the game of baseball, should they be let into the Hall of Fame? Of course, we've debated it countless times here on the show, and you heard at the top of the hour from Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He is the play-by-play man for the Lansing Lugnuts here in the area, and we definitely want to get your thoughts on it. It's certainly a heated topic anytime you talk about it, because the game of baseball is such, from this perspective, it's such a cherished game. Again, we put baseball on the pedestal because it's known as America's sport. It is known as America's sport, folks. It's America's pastime, and it's treasured so much that even any inkling of anyone using illegal performance-enhancing drugs to become better in their advancement of the game, any athlete doing that, it definitely hurts to see it. It's become so rampant now that opinions have fluctuated left and right, and many, I think, have become comfortable with the fact that, hey, this problem is never going to go away, so why not let those who are using the drug into the hall? Now, again, opinions fluctuate, as you just heard from Ty from Lake Orion. If you wanna call in and share your thoughts on it, you know that number, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. All right, well, that kind of wraps up our current sports headliners. Again, call in 517-355-9527. You can find us on Facebook, also at facebook.com/currentsports, and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Lions, folks. Yes, the Lions have a new head coach, Jim Caldwell, now former offensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens. He is the Lions' new head coach. What are your thoughts on it? Give us a call. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. So glad that we allow Current Sports to be a part of your Tuesday afternoon. Let's dive into our next segment of the show, the Lions. If you haven't heard, the Detroit Lions have now a coach, folks. Detroit Lions have hired Jim Caldwell as their head coach, ending a two-week search during which they interviewed only about four candidates. Now, the 58-year-old Caldwell fit a lot of the criteria that Detroit had during its search. The team wanted someone with head coaching experience and experience on offense, apparently preferably with quarterbacks. Of course, the Lions, they could not put in that bid for Ken Wisenhunt, who was the top runner for the Lions. They really wanted Ken Wisenhunt, but Ken, of course, he accepted an offer with the Tennessee Titans yesterday. And now the Lions have decided on Jim Caldwell. Well, Matt and Alex now join me to kind of dive into this thing, guys. And I tell you what, when I got the notification that the Lions had missed out on the opportunity to hire Ken Wisenhunt, I was definitely disappointed because I thought he would have been a great fit here in Detroit and was exactly what this team needed. And when I heard about the hire for Jim Caldwell not too long ago, about an hour or so ago, I wasn't too thrilled, guys. And, we knew after Ken Wisenhunt had accepted his offer with the Titans, it quickly was apparent that Jim Caldwell was the next guy in line, that the Lions liked what they saw from him in the interviews, and they were leaning towards him. Now, when you look at Caldwell's track record, especially last season, it was not great. Under Caldwell this season, the Ravens were 29th in total offense and 25th in scoring. Now, Joe Flacco, who Caldwell was brought in to mentor, threw more interceptions than touchdowns. Caldwell, I think this move was really made. And if you go back to the Tony Dungy quote that I read at the, during our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, in which Tony, if you're just now tuning in, I'll read it again. Tony Dungy said that yesterday when concerning Caldwell and his hire for the Lions, he said, quote, "I know the Lions want discipline and good character in the locker room. I'm not saying their other candidates can't achieve those things, but these are Jim's strengths. With his background, especially from his influence under Joe Paterno at Penn State and hopefully in our program in the NFL." Now, from that standpoint, that's exactly what the Lions needed as well. They needed discipline. This is an undisciplined team. We saw that many, many times throughout this past season. But when you look at the track record of specifically, the Ravens this past year, it's not impressive. His overall track record is nothing stands out to you about Jim Caldwell to makes you just go wow. You know what I mean? And that wow factor is something that it would certainly be missing. Now, he comes in, it's not like he's taking over an offense that is down in the dumps and can't produce, because I think the Lions have a lot of talent. That's one thing that made this past season so disappointing, was because we saw them dwindle that talent and the season boiled down to a huge disappointment. But when you look at Stafford, I think Stafford can be honed into a decent quarter. Well, I think Stafford can be a great quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He's not great. What separates that good and great factor is if you can take care of the ball and if you can make better decisions with the ball as a quarterback. And that's something Matthew Stafford struggled with. Can Caldwell alleviate those problems? I don't know. I have to see more of him. Now, looking at just the X and O's and just his track record, to put it flat out there, guys, I'm not too impressed. I don't know.
To me, it's a typical Lions hire. It is so underwhelming. This is the guy who I personally did not want under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And so of course, he was last on your list.
And Tony Dungy, you can talk about discipline all you want, but if you have a disciplined team that is 2-14, you're going to be fired just the same. You know, it's not going to make a big difference if the team is together when they're losing a bunch of games. And I'm not saying that that's a guarantee that it's going to happen, but you know, look what the Ravens backslid this year. And of course, you know, they lost some players. You know, they lost Anquan Boldin.
Right. They lost
guys
a lot
like
of pieces,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not like, you know, he had a bare cupboard to work with. He still had Joe Flacco, who just signed a huge deal. He still had Ray Rice. And both of them had terrible seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 29th in the league. I mean, there's only 32 teams.
See,
they were
exactly.
The Super Bowl champions last year.
Right.
And you can't really give him credit there because he came in midway through the season. They already had their, you know, their philosophy in place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he was the guy who sparked their run.
Right.
It's just, and when you look at his success, Peyton Manning, you know, is there a player that you have to coach?
Not much fine-tuning you got
to
do there.
Exactly. Is there a player you have to coach less than Peyton Manning? I don't think so.
I mean,
he does the job for you. So
right.
As far as what he could bring, I don't know.
It's question marks now.
I'm disappointed.
I'm disappointed too. I was really, like I said, I thought Ken was going to be the guy. Was really banking on Ken, and when I heard about it, I was really disappointed about it. And yeah, you look at his track record with quarterbacks specifically. Ken Whisenhunt has an unbelievable track record with reviving quarterbacks. You know what I mean? And he's done a great job. When it comes to Caldwell, though, I mean, like you said, Peyton Manning is not much work you have to do there. Brad Johnson, I believe, in 2001. I mean, I got to see more from Caldwell. Right now, I just don't know. I am disappointed though, Alex.
Yeah, Drew Sharp actually wrote a column today about how this was the consolation prize. After Whisenhunt went to the Titans, the Lions scrambled for a coach out of the remaining options. And that's exactly what they did. There were no other candidates besides Munchak and, I guess, Kubiak that were ideally going to go to the Lions unless they pulled a former player out of retirement. I don't know.
Right.
But when you look at the track record, like you said, both great points, yeah, he has Peyton Manning, but it's Peyton Manning. You don't really have to coach him that much. He's a phenomenal quarterback. But at the same time, he was at Wake Forest from 2000 and I think it was 2002. He was there for a while. And with Wake Forest, was that a great ACC football program during those times? Not really.
Right.
But I'm sure he took them out of the weave. He probably took them out of where they were before. So it seems like he has a decent track record, but when you compare him to Whisenhunt, yeah, it was the perfect fit. So I guess we'll have to wait and see to see what happens, how he does with Stafford, and if the Lions improve, but not the idealistic hire.
No, not at all. Now the Caldwell, like you just alluded to, Alex, has been a head coach at two prior stops, from 2009 to 2011 with the Indianapolis Colts, and from 1993 to 2000 with Wake Forest. Now, Caldwell, who turns 59 on Thursday, posted a 26-22 record in three seasons after replacing Tony Dungy in Indy. The Colts reached the Super Bowl in Caldwell's first season at the helm and went to the playoffs the following season. So I guess if there is any light in this whole track record of Caldwell's, I think that may be the most impressive. But you take over a Indianapolis Colts team who has Peyton Manning. Not much you got to do there. So we'll see, guys. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't look great. We're all disappointed because everybody wanted Whisenhunt. We all talked about it here. I think all three of us were vying for Ken Whisenhunt on this show. And to not get him and to see him go to Tennessee. And I really want to know what was the as Matt would say, the straw that broke the camel's back in that whole decision for him to choose the Titans over Detroit. Because it's not like, I mean, if you look at Detroit, I mean, they have so much talent. I mean, I would think coaches would be, you know, running to try to get through the door to get to this job. But I think the aura of Detroit and the history of it really turns a lot of coaches off. And I think that may have been what that factor in Whisenhunt's decision.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a place where coaching careers go to die.
Exactly.
Really. I mean, I believe the status that no head coach of the Lions has ever gotten another NFL head coaching job.
Yeah,
that's
terrible.
Which is ridiculous. And if Caldwell fails here, he'll join that list because, you know, he's had two failed stops. I mean, he went 14-2 one year when he had Peyton Manning, went 2-14 the next.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jim Tressel, who everybody knows, you know, former Ohio State head honcho Jim Tressel, he said one of the most impressive things about Caldwell was when the Colts were 2-14, you know, in those last few weeks, the locker room stayed together. But then you have to take that with a huge grain of salt.
Because your record is 2-14.
That, and because if, you know, if Caldwell comes on board, maybe Tressel does too. So maybe he's trying to put in a good word for his potential future boss. So it's nothing on paper screams that this is a good hire.
Right,
and
exactly.
The big question for me is, why does Jim Schwartz's background influence the guy that the Lions hire next? Why is it because he was a defensive coach, they have to look for an offensive guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't think you need to be a great offensive coach to get the most out of this offense just because there is so much talent. When you have the best player in the league in Megatron and, you know, a rocket-armed quarterback like Matthew Stafford, plus Reggie Bush, Joik Bell. I mean, you've got weapons.
You got the pieces there.
Exactly. So, you know, if you have a defensive-minded coach who hires a good offensive coordinator, you can get by. I don't know why they limited themselves in the search to just guys with NFL head coaching experience who are offensive gurus. It just seems like you're selling yourself short, and if you're the Lions, you can't really afford to do that because you're the Lions.
Exactly. You know, that's so funny, though, because, you know, when you look at it and you compare the offense and the defense, and you, like I said, they were just looking at just about everybody was an offensive coordinator, looking for an offensive type of guy. When you look at it, though, and you compare and contrast the offense and the defense, the defense needs the most work, if you ask me. That secondary needs so much work. I mean, it needs so much. When you talk about offense, they have the weapons. It's just about fine-tuning some things and getting Matthew Stafford to buy in and become a more fine-tuned quarterback. Reggie Bush, hang on to the dang ball. Joik Bell, I think he just needs more playing time because I love Joik Bell.
Same.
Wide receivers, they played great, I thought. They played great, you know, better than average out there. I mean, you got Megatron out there. So if you look at what needs more work, it's the defensive end of things. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know what the thought process was behind that. But we'll see. Only time will tell, folks. All right. Well, it is Tuesday. So you know what that means. Top 5 Tuesday, folks. And, you know, I wanted to have some fun with this one. And, you know, list the top 5 most embarrassing moments in sports. And, guys, I'll start this thing off really quick. For me, when you look at it, I mean, there's so many embarrassing moments in sports. I mean, SportsCenter has the not top 10 flowing every Friday. Now, I think they still do it. I don't know if they still do it anymore. I think they still do it. But there's so many moments to choose from that this one was pretty, pretty hard. But I'll start it off. I would have to go, for me, Shaq and Kazam is my number 5.
That's not embarrassing.
That is so embarrassing. You thought he killed it. Kazam was terrible, Alex. Well, you like Kazam?
I love Kazam.
Oh,
what was the other one he was in? Like, Man something
he was
about
some
steel.
Cop or something, right?
Yeah, he was
the
Man
of Steel
cop. Yeah. It's basically, you know, Shaquille O'Neal as a RoboCop. I think that one might be more embarrassing than Kazam.
You think that's
at least
more embarrassing
Kazam
than
was a kid's movie.
Yeah, Kazam was, but he was just bad. The acting was bad, from Shaq in it. The dancing was bad. I mean, I laugh. If I want a good laugh, I pop in Kazam, okay? Shaq and Kazam is number 5 for me.
All right. Maybe I'm a little biased because I saw it when I was little and I thought it was great.
Have you seen it recently?
Not recently.
Go back and watch it. Okay. You will see what I'm talking about.
Have you ever seen
go back.
Blue Chips? Blue Chips with Shaq? You ever seen Blue Chips?
I heard that was really good. That's when he was at LSU,
must
right?
See. Must see.
It's like he plays his kid from.
This is when it's Nick Nolte. He's a college basketball coach that deals with, like, dirty recruiting. He, like, gets around the rules, and Shaq's this, like, 5-star amazing player that he recruits.
What a stretch for Shaq.
What a stretch. Oh, that's must have been a tough role.
Ray
acting
Allen
range
is also
right
in
there.
But, yeah, Shaq and Kazam. All right, that's number 5 for me.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, I have to probably go with Michael Phelps smoking the bong. You guys know that moment. Okay. Michael Phelps, you know, just a moment. I mean, I believe he was at the University of South Carolina and, you know, just got caught just – you know, getting high, basically. That's definitely embarrassing. Number 3 for me, Mike Tyson, just in general. Mike Tyson has so many. I mean, I will eat your children. I mean, he bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. I mean, so many moments for Mike Tyson. That's just Mike Tyson. You know, he doesn't look as embarrassing. He's just being himself, I guess. 2, I would have to go with, this is a personal one for me. Guys, when I play, this is my sophomore year of high school, right? I'm playing on the team, you know. I'm like on JV, right? And we're playing a school by the name of Edsel Ford, who's kind of like our rivalry. Yeah, I went to Annapolis High School in Dearborn Heights, and that was kind of like one of our rivalries. Anyway, this is like the second quarter, right? We're at the foul line, and the other team is shooting. And he makes the first one. He misses the second one. Now, my teammate, Kwame, if you're listening, Kwame tunes in a lot, Kwame Quarry, still cool to this day, Kwame rebounds the ball, somehow blacks out, and puts the ball back up and gives them 2 points. Kwame, if you're listening, give us a call, man. I would love to hear your rendition of that story. But he said he blacked out. He didn't know where he was for like 2 seconds.
Wow.
And he put the ball in the other team's basket. That was so embarrassing. That's a moment I witnessed. And number one has to be Dennis Rodman and all of his antics from, I'll just list a few of them here. In April of 1993, in an attempt to get himself traded, Rodman begins taking his shoes off on the Pistons bench. Sometimes reading a magazine, fined repeatedly for his team's behavior. In 1997, when he was with the Bulls, he kicks a courtside TV cameraman and is suspended for 11 games. In April of 1999, after 6 months, Carmen Electra, that whole divorce thing, and, you know, he was caught wearing a wedding dress during that moment. I can go on and on. So many Dennis Rodman moments, but yeah, Dennis Rodman, you got a lot of them, man. A lot of moments. All right, guys, go ahead.
It's a pretty good list.
Yeah.
I like how you just put people in general.
In general, yeah, exactly.
The most embarrassing.
Yes.
I'm going to go, okay, let's start out number five. Lindsey Jacob Ellis, a snowboard cross competitor, has a nice lead in the 2006 snowboard cross final, the Winter Olympics, decides to ham it up a little bit on the final hill.
Yeah.
Subsequently biffs it and loses out on the gold medal. I'm guessing that is a moment she will never forget for the rest of her life.
Oh, man, that's not good, yeah.
No. Number four, Marty Mornhinweg, taking the wind in Chicago.
Yes, that is a historic one. Marty Mornhinweg.
Classic.
Marty is at, New York now, I think?
Where Who knows?
At? I think he's at New York.
He bounces around. Yeah. Just the defining moment of his coaching career, his head coaching career at least.
Yeah.
Number three, Matt Hasselbeck in the playoffs. The Seahawks are playing the Packers. Overtime, coin toss. He says, we'll take the ball, and we're going to score. Promptly throws a pick six to lose the game and end his season.
Oh, gosh.
Tough break, Matt.
I remember that. Yep.
Number two, Alex Rodriguez. He's in the news. In 2004, ground ball against the Red Sox in the ALCS. Decides to try and slap the ball out of Bronson Arroyo's hand as he tries to tag him. He gets called out anyway.
You know, A-Rod, when I was doing research, A-Rod has a lot of embarrassing moments.
Oh, SI has like a 25
yeah, I saw that.
Page
yeah.
photo spread of A-Rod's embarrassing moments. I mean, my whole list could have been from that.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one, this past year, Heat Bulls. Heat fan, because I'm going after the fans too, Philomena Tobias. Mm-hmm. Flips off and berates Joakim Noah after he got ejected from the game.
That's
as
right.
he's walking out of the tunnel, she gets right up in his face from her seat, flips him the bird, says some things that, you know, can't be repeated on the air.
Right.
Gets caught on national TV, becomes a bit of a sensation for a few days, but
That's pretty
keep yourself in check.
Right. Fans, calm down, all right? Calm down.
I know it gets intense,
too.
But...
Right.
You know, keep your wits about you.
Woosa. All right, I feel you. Alex?
Good list so far. All right, number five. I have two recent ones. My number five is Johnny Football being thrown out of a fraternity party. It's just kind of embarrassing. It caused a big national scene.
Yeah, yeah. I like that one.
Number four, the Dennis Rodman recent antic over North Korea with a...
And he said he was drunk. And
right,
he apologized.
Right.
So, yeah.
Number three, taking it back, Steve Bartman, Chicago Cubs fan, costing the Cubs... the playoffs and a potential World Series, maybe? A potential playoff run when he caught the ball in the outfield, cost the Cubs a playoff run. Embarrassing. One of the most hated men in sports.
Yeah.
Number two, the Mark Sanchez headbutt fumble. I remember watching it live.
The
and
butt
just,
fumble.
Just dying. That was hilarious. Number one is taking it back to the 1986 World Series, Billy Buckner. Ground ball loses it for the Sox.
Oh, God. That's a very, very good list. I like the very good list, guys. That was very impressive. Really.
Oh, yeah.
And in honor of, and congrats to the Cubs. They finally have a mascot. Clark the Cub.
That's got a cool ring to it.
That's
what I did today, you know?
Yeah. I
thought of Steve Bartman. I was like, oh, Cubs.
I like that a lot. Yeah, the Steve Bartman. Yeah. But yeah, okay. And also, you know, it's kind of a hybrid top five here.
Mm-hmm.
top five mascots of all time, in no particular order. Benny the Bull for the Chicago Bulls. Philly fanatic of the Philadelphia Phillies. Love that. What is that thing? I don't know. What is that?
He's some sort of alien.
Yeah, some alien or love something. I don't know. He's it's pretty cool, too, though. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Mr. Mets of the New York Mets. Rory, I think, is so underrated for the Detroit Lions. I like Rory. I don't know something about Rory. I love Rory. And number one, Sparty.
You're biased, Al.
Yeah, I'm biased.
That's a biased thing.
We're all biased, though.
For me, number five is the Raptor for the Toronto Raptors. Now, Toronto, they don't have a lot to celebrate there because their basketball team has historically been pretty terrible. But he's one of the best mascots in the league.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty hilarious trick where he's in an inflatable bag and he eats a cheerleader.
Oh, I love that.
Hilarious.
I love that. I've seen that.
Very impressive to watch. He actually tore his Achilles before this season.
Oh, get out of here.
Fans in Toronto were brought to tears. That's how much he meant to the team. He had to miss the whole year. It's a really sad story. I'm
going
to go Clutch, who is the Rockets mascot. He won 2013 Mascot of the Year. And if you're winning Mascot of the Year,
you need to be in that list.
You've got your stuff together.
Yeah.
Next up, Otto the Orange from Syracuse, because he is an orange.
Right.
He's just a big old orange. And it's you don't have to be super creative. But that image, you know, that you associate with Syracuse, it's just he is Syracuse.
What does he mean? He's just a big old orange.
Yeah, big old orange ball.
Just one of them. Big old oranges. Right. next up, I am going to go with the Auburn War Eagle because it's a real eagle.
It is a real eagle.
You definitely get bonus points if you have an actual live animal as your mascot.
That's a good one.
And you know, it's crazy because isn't their mascot? It's supposed to be the Auburn Tigers.
They are, yeah.
The War Eagle.
Their nickname is the Tigers.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a War Eagle on their jerseys, too. It's weird. It's odd. Then number one, Sparty.
There you go. Bias.
Very good. I'll go real quick. Number five, this is a non-biased list right here. Number five, Brutus, the Ohio State Buckeye mascot. I think he's just a funny, like, little quirky little guy. Number four, Rocky from the Denver Nuggets. Have you ever seen him dunk?
He's pretty good, man.
He is.
The best thing I've seen him do, it actually isn't really him. He is attempting half-court shots, and Russell Westbrook of the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder will just guard the rim and just jump up and goaltend all of his half-court shots.
I have not seen that. It's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh, it's funny.
That's great. Three Philly fanatic, I have him, too. Great.
The race is great.
Two Sparty. Number one.
Whoa. I said this is unbiased.
It is.
Okay. All
number
right.
one.
Sparty's in there.
This is the only mascot that is human, the Notre Dame Leprechaun.
Oh, you like the Leprechaun?
I cannot believe you're saying he's the best.
I think he's great.
He's number one?
I was going to bring him up as the worst.
No, he's great.
He's just a guy dressed up as a leprechaun.
Have you seen some of his acts when he marched the Notre Dame march? It's a classic.
He's annoying.
It's a classic college football mascot.
It's pretty easy to do when you're not wearing a giant costume.
Historically.
But he's just wearing it. Oh, gosh. Alex,
he's a human. That's great.
That's awesome. That's just... Oh, he's number one.
Yeah. He's
Alex
great.
Shar. Leave it up to Alex Shar, I tell you. All right, folks. Well, we are unfortunately out of time. Always a great time here on the show. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning into today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Thanks so much for Jesse Goldberg Strassler, the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, who joined me at the top of the hour. Thanks so much. And also, sign up to be a part of the Current Sports TV audience as I sit down with MSU football royalty, folks. Robert Viney. Do not want to miss that. Sit down. It will happen tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Sign up online at WKAR.org to be a part of that live audience. As always, take care, have one fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.